Hello and welcome to the Tech Leadership Podcast. I am Tom Kafka, your host, and today we are joined by someone truly inspiring, award-winning experienced technology executive coach, an entrepreneur, a problem solver, an inventor, an inspiring speaker. Once called by MIT unstoppable, apparently, Mr. Paweł Urbański. Hi, Paweł. Thank you for joining us today. It's great to have you here.
Okay, so hi everyone. Hi, Tom. And
have I missed anything? Our
no,
pleasure. Have I missed anything from
no,
your introduction?
I guess it was maybe even maybe even too much.
So, can you tell our audience, Paweł, who is Paweł Urbański? What do you do?
Okay, so Paweł Urbański. Paweł Urbański, as you said, works. You know, I work with technologies per se. You know, I still have some eye on coding. This is more or less my hobby, the area for side projects. So this is, let's say, this you know, like more relaxing part. When
Brilliant.
It comes to things which are more professional, I work with you know, startups, software houses, or you know, larger companies, either on designing something from scratch, like, you know, like a new system or just a process, which obviously now uses, you know, this or that technology. So that's this thing. Then there is this more human part, because we must remember that it's very likely that people who are listening to this podcast are much more into technology. You know, maybe they are just, you know, creating something. They are very deep into this, but mostly people are users. You know, different skills, different contexts. You know, not all companies are somehow leaning towards being a tech company. There are still loads of, you know, traditional businesses doing their job. So I work on this part. You know, how to organize these people, sort of, you know, show them how things can be done easier with tech, and what, for example, should not be touched by tech.
Brilliant.
I'm not so that's it. Yeah, and then you know, I do some conference speaking, or coaching one-on-one. You know, being a, let's say, a freelancer or a solo consultant, that gives me that bit of a freedom to you know, switch projects, as long as, you know, hands are shaken, not shaking. I just go ahead, you know, that's all.
So it sounds like technology is something that you do with passion. And as a technology leader, what initially attracted you to this role, and how do you see your unique perspective and experiences contributing to your leadership style and approaches?
Okay, I guess that I need to, you know, get one cut out of the bag. Yeah, you know, it happened some years ago that you know, I lost my sight. So at a certain point of my life, you know, technology became like a Swiss Army knife to do lots of things. You know, from studying to you know, communicating with you know, with other people, and because in my case, you know, using a computer is like it's more or less like a zero-sum game when in terms of, you know, working and doing even this side hobby projects, or you know, even such a thing like reading. Yeah. I was, you know, I guess it was inevitable. And I started, you know, moving from being this, you know, someone we call a power user tweaking some things here and there. And then I got introduced to coding. I went through pretty much the path as any young person at his or her let's say university age goes through. Then there was the mature life. But as you said, all the things I've done came sort of naturally. I would say naturally. Either it was curiosity to tweak something for myself to make my life easier, or because someone asked me to join for a project.
Right. Pavel, your journey, you told us, you shared with us that you're visually impaired technology leader. It is very inspiring. I believe you must come with multiple difficulties. Would you be able to share with us how you first became interested in technology at all, and how you overcame the challenges related to your visual impairment to pursue a career in this field?
Okay, so technically speaking, like the first computer I ever used, it was 386 Intel machine. It was 1995 or 1996, something like this, with a hardware speech synthesizer. Yeah, so for all the Star Wars fans, that there was R2D2 talking. But I started from DOS. So I guess I went through the evolution of computing as we pretty much know it. Maybe I'm not a veteran who worked on IBM mainframes and so on and so on. But I went through all this evolution, like DOS, then early Windows, then things started moving to the web, and so on and so on. So, as I said, since I couldn't escape using the computer so much, I started being interested. Then a friend of my father introduced me to coding in a more formal way. So at first, I was developing some simple things in Visual Basic for applications in Microsoft Office. And this was pretty interesting case because I didn't have to care that much about the UI. Yeah, because Office was giving the framework for the
Yes.
UI. So for me, it was just about the logic, fixing error here and there and so on and so on. Obviously, somebody took a look and checked things up, but that was all. Then things started changing after, like the web started becoming what we call now a platform,
Right.
because nowadays we can pretty much say that unless you are someone who needs specialized software, you pretty much use an operating system to launch a browser. This is more or less where we stand now. And what changed with this shift was that since HTML was in a way limited to what it could express, at the same time these constraints allowed these web apps be pretty much accessible out of the box, with quirks here and there or disasters here and there. But as long as you have alternatives, you can pick something up to use. And sometime around like year 2010. I realized that I just like tweaking. I like these things with tech,
Right.
and I gained some experience to not consider myself self a newbie basically the validation came with money, like since a
Of
couple of
course, he
companies.
always does, yeah.
Yes, since a couple of companies paid me for what I did, I said, like, let's go on, yeah. And there was progression. And what I would like to say is that maybe nowadays things are changing pretty fast because we've got all these huge technology companies that have resources to push things quickly. But on the other hand, like individually, you just need to take your time to learn certain things, basically learn the nuances. And what's difficult for people in technology right now who sort of manage technology, like as you said, technology tech leaders, is gaining this confidence that they know the nuances, like whether
Right.
they choose correctly what they are going to implement or shut down, build or buy, and so on and so on.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned, technology is very fast progressing at the moment, and it's quite difficult to stay on the top of the game. Sometimes you need to specialize nowadays, where you used to have that's comes from my experience. You used to be an IT guy. Right, and you could put the computer parts together, you could write a simple program, HTML website, you name it, and fix things. Nowadays, we need to specialize a lot. It's just because there's so many things, new things being introduced that human being is physically not possible for human being to learn it all.
Yeah, that's correct. But let me bring one point. But are we really solving very new problems? I think that that's not the case.
Right.
Because like most apps companies use, these good old pretty boring, as we call them, line of business applications, You may hear some CRM there, maybe some document management, but all the spotlight is on these big things, like everybody going wild and crazy about ChatGPT, for example, like last year. But it's, in a way, it's also a bubble, or like AI. AI is just a set of statistical algorithms. It definitely can do certain things because we finally have the computing power. We sort of figured out what data to store or what to throw away, or maybe not to throw away nowadays. It's just like let's collect just in case. But I think that many of the problems are still the same. And what you said about specialization, I think it's more about managing this overhead of complexity, sometimes needless complexity, than what it's worth.
Right. And how do you think, as a technology leader, what steps do we need to take to make sure that our teams remain innovative and adaptable?
Okay, first thing is to sort of understand what company we are and what's enough. Like first things first, like what's enough in terms of technology to make certain things going at the company. Because it simply re releases the energy for other things, yeah. So that's part number one, yeah. Then this thing with innovation. Okay, I was admitted to a boot camp by MIT, and it was called like entrepreneurship innovation boot camp and so on and so on. It was pretty neat, yeah. And I was even mentoring startup later on after coming back. And you know, the thing with innovation is that you have to realize what kind of sort of innovation, sort of like, you know, next steps you can actually take. What makes sense at your scale? Because
Right.
you know, you can, sorry, just one thing. You can innovate because you use some existing tools in a clever way that will give you a bit of an edge. Like, for example, your employees will start leaving, going home earlier. That's a huge bonus, yeah? Because, you know, they can rest and so on. They make, you know, less mistakes and so on and so on. Or you can innovate because you've got, you know, cash, you've got that thing called talent, and try to develop something new. But the problem now is that the developing something new is it's not that easy. Like, in the speed of recent times, and obviously this turmoil with COVID and other things, I think that people somehow miss the point, realizing that you know, figuring something new 5 or 6 ago was way much easier than to figure out something new nowadays.
Is that because a lot of things have been invented already, or is that because we, in all that noise that comes through technology and a lot of startups being created, etc., we're losing will or belief to that we can invent something new?
You know, at first things first, you know, basic needs in terms of, you know, doing this or that, as you said, this is more or less covered. Yeah. Sometimes you've got this, you know, like, you know, happy shots, like, you know, Slack, you know, became, you know, big because of, you know, different sort of. It wasn't actually that much different, yeah, from what you have with Microsoft 365 or some other tool for communication. It somehow caught fire, yeah. And so, you know, such things happen. They maybe change something. You know, the thing with will to change, it's not that simple. I would say that. This will to change something is driven, you know, basically where the money goes. And money has this tendency of sometimes, you know, following certain, like, you know, hot topics,
Right.
and so on and so on. You know, there are so many, like, you know, boring problems that, you know, could be solved, but there is no attention. So,
So you put a good point here. You mentioned that you mentioned money. Of course, we can be as brilliant as we can and have all the knowledge in the world, but without appropriate investment, we might not be able to promote our product. So how is money important? To what extent it is important for, like, startup companies? Let's take as an example.
Startups. I was once on some podcast, and I said that startups are not really competing between each other. At the sort of more serious scale, the competition is between these venture funds. Like, startups are like, you know, proxy wars between venture funds.
That makes sense.
Because when you sort of, you know, think about, like, you know, how much money you have to put to run for a year, yeah, like, you know, developers are very expensive. Like, nowadays there is this rush, oh, AI will write code for us. No, it can write just very simple code, and then you spend tweaking things like making naming, even, you know, naming of variables sort of look like the rest of the code, and so on and so on, and you realize that actually Do we even need to generate this initial code with AI? Yeah, like I don't mind using this as like a research tool, yeah, or smarter search engine. Yeah, when you think about, you know, hiring a couple of developers and some other things, and the numbers grow so quickly, yeah. So, you know, that's the like that's the case. You know, who will back it up? Yeah. Then another thing is that not every idea is the idea for a startup. Yeah, like
Right.
the brutal truth is that certain startups would be just a side project in a medium-sized company.
Right.
Nobody would even call it it's maybe a nice idea which we can try like another product. Yeah, it's good that people want to develop these things because, you know, when they de develop outside these companies, you never know where it leads to, but at first it has to survive, not die. All
I
these startups, yeah.
think that's that point of surviving is something very important that a lot of young entrepreneurs don't realize that it's not a big deal to start a company and have an idea. It's probably 2 or 3 years after you started to reach that point and survive, convert yourself into not startup anymore, but established company. You need clients, and if you're backed up by some venture capital group or some investors, then that's great. Without it, it is super difficult, I believe.
Yeah, and another thing is that when people talk about, you know, entrepreneurship, innovation, and new companies, now like by default, everybody thinks tech because there is this wishy-washy idea of, you know, high margins, you know, super growth, and so on and so on. But there are also, you know, other places where you know things are going on. But you know, starting something like, you know, I guess 10 years ago, there was this trend of suffixing every single industry with tech, like, you know, med tech,
That's
edutech,
true.
whatever tech, yeah. And in a way, I started being tired. On my way to the commute train, I am passing by this basically like, you know, street stores pop-up, calling it fashionably pop-up store with veggies. Yeah, you know, I guess this lady has more stable business model than 99% of startups in accelerators.
Oh,
And
that's good.
that's it. Like, you know, I do keep fingers crossed for all these people. But you know, when I was coaching them, I said, like, listen, life outside this idea. Like, you have to think more, what if it fails, than what if it succeeds? There are diff there are,
Right.
th th these are two different headaches.
So when we are building the team and growing the company, growing the business, communication is something that is essential. And it is essential skill for leader. In this case, we're speaking about technology leaders, but I believe it's transferable to any kind of leadership. Can you share with us some strategies that you might have developed or found effective in fostering clear and effective communication within your teams?
Clear, effective communication. Okay, first thing first. Once you sort of get to this point that you are the tech leader, not leader tech, you must know that you are like the middleware. Sort of to tap your technology knowledge, you are a middleware. sort of, translating, what that, business wants and what these developers are complaining about. You are sometimes like, the Schrödinger's cat.
Right.
So this is something to refresh. And second thing, we right now sort of swim in the sea of buzzwords, jargon, and so on and so on. We may laugh at it, but you cannot escape it. Why?
Of
For
course.
example, because companies make these things up or put a lot of content because they want to chase SEO, search engine rankings, and so on and so on. But it's really good to bring things to simple terms, because when people are in the office, talking over something, they usually speak, very plain language, sometimes language not suitable to be heard by children. But this is quite effective, this is like, the I would say sometimes this is the earliest expression, yeah, of some more elaborate emotion, felt by this developer.
Right.
And that's all. I think that reading and writing is very, very important, but reading not necessarily, sort of brought down to tweets and other things. You cannot gain wisdom, or some, neat idea, understanding of something, by reading something that can be, fitted in a bumper sticker.
Right.
I know that it's always the fight for time, but read just regular books, books on paper. Maybe that's counterintuitive, but I think it's something like, gives you more focus. I know that I have to use a computer to read, but on the other hand, I'm always in this audiobook mode because my screen reader is reading with a speech synthesizer. Yeah, but I
Yeah.
do know the value of, regular book, regular paper. Try to write something, something longer. Try to make things slower.
Right. Which might be
Right.
difficult because technology is fast-paced and people are under pressure,
No,
a lot of time.
listen, like, technology can be as fast as possible, yeah. But
Right.
what determines its real speed is the adoption rate.
Right.
And that's all. And, everybody can go at a different speed, yeah. When you are just starting, you should go slow because of possible mistakes. Yeah. Like, think about precautionary principle.
Right.
There is all this talk about speed, yeah, and yet people, waste time, this back and forth on Slacks, emails, and so on and so on. And then it's not about speed. It's more about falling into this, panic state. But oh my God, a week has gone by. We had, these meetings and so on and so on. And let's, push something out so it doesn't look like we wasted, a week.
Right.
Not always, but it can happen. Slow down a little bit. Make things simpler. This is what we already talked about, but all this complexity right now is just because everybody thinks that they have to, differentiate a lot. Not that much. I would say that,
Right.
people are getting tired of this sort of, superficial, advanced, technology, and so on and so on.
Then specifically in software development, we can be presented with numerous challenges. technical hurdles, deadlines. How do you approach problem solving and decision making as a technology leader? And how do you support your teams in overcoming the obstacles or impediments they might have?
Give such nonsense sayings like, over promise and over deliver, or however it goes.
Right.
Because it's
I
basically,
hear that a lot.
yeah, because that's, putting your head on the chopping board by your own will. Yeah. Manage expectations. When you say that, oh, we will build this or that feature, everybody will say, of course, yeah, so it's cool, because they have no skin in the game. You've got the skin in the game.
Right.
You'll have to sit these hours. So, I know that, as you said, there can be this pressure that, oh, we've got competition, and your competition thinks, oh my God, we've got competition. Yeah. So it's not that it doesn't exist, yeah, but when your product is somehow decent and so on, that means that your core, your basics were done right, and after that point you are just starting to do decorations, honestly. Yeah. So I would start from managing expectations. Yeah. Thinking about, developers and how they work. You must remember that people have different skill levels. Their energy can be different. So, like, don't add the unnecessary stress.
Right.
Like, leave them alone. Like, I sometimes work with companies, and my favorite thing to introduce is like 0 meeting days. Trust me, sometimes you can reorganize work so that there are just 2 days when people have meetings.
That's a fantastic idea. Actually, it's if any of my team colleagues listen to that, we probably need to introduce some no meeting
Yeah, like,
days in our calendars.
start with 1 day. Like, you've got all these meetings, spread, here and there, because people never had a meeting to decide that Tuesday is without meetings.
Right.
I know that there are people who sort of, need to plug into the external world, yeah, and obviously that's okay, like salespeople or customer support and so on and so on. But all the others, you can cut it, yeah. It's about organizing work, because there will always be chaos. So, not trying to sort of, protect just like 1 or 2 days can make wonders. That's one thing. Then another thing, which is quite difficult to push through, but we tend to sort of, leave things for the last minute, whether we want it or not. Sometimes you just cannot do much about it. Yeah. It just slips. But, being very philosophical and very posh, like, doing things last minute is done exactly the same as done with some time in advance.
Right. I think,
Buffers, like, try to think whether you can, squeeze some buffers somewhere.
You've mentioned that some people need to be exposed to the outside world or the business, and there is a need for bridging information between tech development team or whatever IT team it is. and the rest of the business, and that usually tasks us with some of the requirements. So I'm not sure if you are into Agile a lot, if it's something that you recommend, but that's probably a role for the product owners, right? And surroundings of product owners to fulfill that role of bridge of a bridge between the business and software developers. And from what you say, I understand it might be quite a crucial role to play. Because on one hand, we have business users who give you requirements, and they usually can't wait, and everything is needed for yesterday, usually. And then software developers who really need to concentrate, you need to speak their language as well. So, in your view, the product owner, should that be a tech person? Should that be a technology person who's got people skills and can speak to the business? Or should that be somebody more business oriented and not necessarily have technical knowledge?
No, the most precise answer is depends. Yeah, it depends. Sort of in the nature, in the wild, it usually happens that people switch from these technical roles to less and less technical roles. Like you start as a, junior developer in the kindergarten, yeah. Then you rise, high up. And after a while, you become the analyst or whatever that role is called. And you shift to these, managerial roles sometimes because this is how, everybody does so. Or sometimes it's like, oh, we cannot pay you more unless you are labeled a manager or a product owner and so on and so on. So there can be some bureaucracy to that. I think that I would lean more towards a person who has this like tech knowledge. Even being a power user, rather the other way around. Let me tell you why. There is this fake image of technology being easy, like oh, it's drag and drop. Oh, there are the zero code tools nowadays. Like, why do we need developers? Yeah. Oh, ChatGPT created a website. Yeah. It's not that easy. Yeah. So I would say get a tech person with some soft skills, but this is also about the famous power struggles at the companies. Who can say yes, who can say no? And and that's the case. Yeah. There is all the risk and consequences of certain decisions. Like we talked about survival. When you are just starting and you've got like, I don't know, four or five clients, then every single request from any of them seems to be like the life and death situation. When you are established, sometimes you can say like, oh, that's so good. They ask for the future. When we say no, they will likely cancel, but it will be such a relief. This is the reality. Not all clients are good clients. Yeah. Okay, they pay, that's okay, but come on, I mean, you are delivering something what they need. Otherwise they would never ask you. Obviously, when they pay. So, what stage are you? Are you in? And
So,
yeah, and last thing, like the time frame. things tend to shrink nowadays because all these like huge companies with insane resources, they brag that, oh, we do 25 releases per day, like Facebook's or Google's and so on and so on. What kind of releases? You change the shade of color of the button. Like,
Right, yeah,
be
that's the case.
serious, yeah.
That is the
Be
case sometimes.
serious. So, yeah, technical person with soft skills and some authority.
Brilliant. Thank you, Pavel. If we can touch a little bit on the inclusion side and accessibility. So diversity and inclusion are increasingly recognized as crucial factors in fostering creativity and innovation within organizations. How do you promote diversity and inclusivity within your teams? And how do you
Well,
ensure that everyone feels valued and they're being empowered and motivated so they contribute more?
okay. First of all, basically ask people what they did before, formally and informally. Because there is one thing what they put on the resume, you have to stick to these bullet points and so on and so on. And you never know whether people have some kind of hidden gems, like something they do on the side, and you suddenly realize that, oh my God, this guy or gal is a passionate COBOL developer, yeah.
You just reminded me of that language I used it in the past.
But this is a very hot skill. I've got a friend who charges more than executives who hire him. Make, yeah, make. And so like check this thing, yeah. Because basically, people feel more confident around certain let's say tasks, things to do, because of their experience. That's one thing. Thinking about diversity and inclusion, this is definitely a good thing to have, but there is also this effect which can sometimes backfire a bit. You have to be mindful to not cross the attention level,
Right.
yeah. Like, okay, acknowledge that, someone is, I don't know, partially sighted or, I don't know, blind or this or that background. Yeah. But I think this is like the good level of attention, because,
Right.
these people, they are who they are. Yeah. But on the other hand, they definitely know that they are applying for this or that job, yeah, and such skills are required, yeah. When you put too much focus, other team members who are not in this particular situation, they may get this freezing effect. This is what I experienced firsthand in many, many occasions. I'm blind. Yeah, okay. This is not what I'm going to switch off or on. This is what it is. There are workarounds, but people shouldn't, feel paralyzed because they say, like, look, have you seen the movie yesterday? Of course I did. I used to do mountain climbing, pretty high mountain climbing, and people say, like, oh, but you do mountain climbing for the views. Of course you do. And so think about both sides of the team.
Sure.
So
And
that doesn't that, that doesn't backfire, yeah.
thanks, Pavel. As someone who has overcome personal challenges to achieve success in the industry, do you have any advice that you can give to our audience, or do you have, how to overcome similar obstacles to be successful in technology?
Be successful in technology. First things first, like really ask yourself, where in this technology mess you want to be. Because technology is huge. Like what comes first to mind is, being a software developer or something, someone similar role. Yeah. But then you've got, marketing people, you've got, analysts, you've got, quality assurance people, people who are, administrating systems, or people who tweak performance. Yeah, like once you start making this list, it can go pretty long. Yeah. So, and you can start in one place, and then obviously move, either because you will want to or because you will have to, for the company will fire you and you will have to find another job. Yeah. So do not lock yourself into this path that you have to start from software development. It can be hinted by all these, boot camp coding schools nowadays. Coding is not that easy. It's actually mostly this tedious place to be. After a while, once you gain experience, it's obviously becomes easier. And beware of these job adverts or claims that everybody makes insane, salaries. No, that's not the case. Yeah, it obviously happens that understand like how many people, what kind of experience they have. You can have the same experience, but this huge multinational can pay you X, but the other company next door simply cannot do this. They just cannot pull it. Yeah. So that's this, this thing. You can be just a power user. This is what I am changing, shifting to nowadays. Like I want to convert my technology skills, whether I can code some things and so on and so on, to do some little things for myself. I'm planning some what I call them like mini products. Yeah. But I somehow realized that, being a software developer, no, that is not for me. And a couple of clients told me, like, no ways, you are much better, figuring things out, how to change things or analyze and so on. Like, never code. One client told me that he will throw me out the window if he sees me touching code. And somehow, after being in technology, even move away from it. Because, many companies, like need someone who understand, who like understands the tech, especially the risks. Like can ignore the all the shiny new objects. This is a huge skill right now. Otherwise, you will be just running implementation after implementation, change after change, for the sake of change, just because someone released something. I would say realize that this is a huge space. You can convert some of your experience and skills to something nearby. You don't have to be a developer, but you can. And going back from technology to other places is also the way.
It's very good advice. Thank you, Pavel. Can we talk a little bit about accessibility tools? As it is a growing topic, and you're using accessibility tools yourself, how do you advocate for and prioritize accessibility in software product? And what steps do you take to ensure that they're usable by all individuals, regardless of their abilities?
I can somehow say that I am a bit of like a walking, living, breathing case study. Yeah. Because I can just, pull my smartphone and just, do a couple of funny moves on the touch screen, and basically, people see how it works. So like that's the instant demo. And the same goes with desktop or these web apps. And nothing makes a better, impression or wow effect than showing something which is insanely broken or doesn't make sense.
Right.
Like, for example, the web is a pretty interesting case because what you see on the screen being cited does not always correspond to what the screen reader is reading, because you can override the labels and descriptions and so on and so on, in a way which is totally hidden from the sighted person. It's by applying some HTML attributes, yeah. And I coined my saying that UX is user experience, not user extermination. And basically, accessibility is about letting people get information in an alternative way, which will let them do the same task, like get about the same result.
Right.
Yeah, like for example, I cannot see a chart, but there can be a way that picks up certain highlights from this chart. Yeah, like maximum minimums, like being the basic stuff. Yeah, and this is something that's enough for me, because when I'm writing something up, I say like, oh, okay, there was this okay, last month the shift in web traffic from social media went up this and that. I cannot see it on the chart, but it can be represented just a regular boring value in the table or something like this. Yeah. So that's one thing. I'm obviously giving examples which I'm the most familiar with,
Sure, of course.
not seeing. Don't overdo things, because what's happening nowadays over a couple of last, I don't know, 3, 5 years is like compliance over sanity.
Right.
And to be honest, this is something what makes me a bit, a bit furious. Yeah. Because in certain cases, it goes so far that it insults any basic, like, human intelligence.
Right.
Like, when there is this enterprise app, and obviously they have to care about accessibility to get a stamp. Oh, we are WCAG compliant, yada yada yada. Yeah, because the governments will never buy from us, and so on and so on. We are so fantastic, employ 8,000 people all over the world, but not a single person who is disabled. Yeah, but we are definitely accessible. I know that case firsthand. And you click on a menu to pick something from that menu. And because over interpretation, or like literal interpretation of WCAG, every single item is labeled in the following way, way. Open the item. Open the item. Open the item. Once you hear it for the fifth time, like open, but this is a menu. When you hit enter on this, it will likely perform certain operation. Maybe you won't blow up your neighbor. And you know what's the disturbing case is that, I know the code. I know how to check the code. All the sighted people do not get the menu with prefix of open and suffix of item.
Right.
Lack of sight does not hinder that much the logical apparatus.
So what you what you're saying as developers, let's not overdo and
don't over like,
don't treat visually impaired or hearing impaired or whichever impairment it is, people as stupid,
it's not,
basically, right?
it's I know that this is an exaggerated case, but it speaks to imagination, I guess. The thing is that people have a lot of goodwill sometimes maybe too much. What they lack, they are in this delta situation that they have their outsider idea of what it's like to use this software, where I have my insider idea how it is to use my software. I develop my certain patterns just like everybody else. Like, when you open some desktop app and you click on file, you basically expect that there will be, open, save as, close, whatever. Yeah. So many things are basically no-brainers. Like you've seen these things like, million times or heard with a screen reader.
Right.
So, don't overdo things. Understand that not everything can be done accessible. In an accessible way. Accessibility is also about matching what people do at the companies or government organization, whatever, to the tools they use. Like think about whether there can be an alternative, like for example, creating content. Okay, you can create this content inside a WordPress editor, yeah. But trust me, I am a big fan of learning Markdown. Markdown is a fantastic format to create content.
Right.
Because it's easy to mark things. So this is a heading, what level it is, this is something emphasized, whatever, and so on and so on. Then just like add this plugin that converts Markdown to WordPress format, but it is five times easier to write things up in a regular notepad. And then just copy paste. Or save the file, send it to someone. Think also about alternative ways of doing the same thing, if possible.
That's a good tip, I think, for developers or anybody who's looking at accessibility tools.
Ask these people, because frequently they don't really speak up because they fear that they in extreme case that they may get fired, yeah. Because someone may think that, oh, they are not able to do these things on the job. It's not that they are not able. Certain tools make it more or less difficult. That's all, yeah. And it's actually like with everybody else, yeah, in a way.
Did you come across in your experience tools, accessibility tools, that actually were more disturbing for you than helping?
It's like when you think about accessibility tools, it's basically screen readers, screen magnifiers, yeah. And what they do, they tap into what's exposed by, for example, a web browser or an editor, yeah. And a couple of years ago, I sent a couple of fixes to Microsoft to fix their VS Code because they were simply flooding the screen reader with unnecessary notifications.
Right.
Like for example, there was a pop-up with completions, yeah. And when I hit enter, because like document dot whatever, enter, yeah. And there were always sending this notification, but hitting enter inserted this or that string. Imagine after every completion.
Right.
And
Yeah, I can im imagine that can be a
yeah,
bit
like
frustrating.
and I was stunned because this is something you can pick up in like 10 seconds when you do use the software.
Right.
So it's testing by actual users. Understand that there is a difference between the app somebody is using every day versus like the landing page where you can afford to sort of be more verbose with descriptions and so on and so on. People who are partially sighted or blind or whatever, they obviously have the different mode. Sometimes they need a bit more time, yeah. But they obviously develop lots of shortcuts. They even develop more shortcuts around doing things fast than regular users.
Thank you,
So
Pavel.
yeah, so
Yeah.
that's more or less about it.
If we go back to the technology and technology leadership. Looking ahead, what do you see as the biggest challenges, and what are going to be the opportunities for the tech leaders like yourself, and then the ever evolving landscape of technology, and how do you plan to address them? What do you foresee being biggest challenges and opportunities few
Okay,
years ahead?
years ahead. The first challenge is the effect of winners taking all.
Right.
It's happening now. Like we are busy running and so on and so on, but it's like, everybody buying everybody, not necessarily, huge company buying very tiny company. It's basically that somehow significantly bigger company buying someone smaller, obviously in their space and so on and so on.
Yeah.
But and what it leads to? It leads to like almost zero innovation. Like it will be labeled as innovation what they do, but it will be more like reaction to heavy enough complaints
Right.
from similar sized clients. And yeah, this is how it is. Maybe I'm not at this level of business or working with such companies very often, but this is what you can see. Then another challenge will be this complexity, right? Because everybody wanted to have a startup or create a product, we now have got like this, sea of different tools for this or that. Okay, you can integrate them, but then you have to babysit all these integrations, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's not that much of a big deal when you are a pretty sizable information organization, sorry. But when you are somehow, small, like, couple of dozen employees, and there is, yet, as you said, this IT guy or two, it's getting hard, yeah, to keep up. You can obviously switch, but who will you switch to? You will switch to this big player who consolidated, tools they had or companies they acquired,
Yeah.
and basically the whale is drying for the smaller guys, and I'm not the biggest fan of this, yeah. Because all these huge numbers look good, but Google has this much of cash, just basically lying around, or Apple has, okay, but they do nothing with this, to be honest. Yeah, it just sits there. So this is the complexity part will be definitely the challenge. Some people will say that this is also an opportunity, as long as there will be clients interested in handling that,
Sure.
not escaping to the big ones. Then yeah, there is this thing called talent. Like, every company is complaining that they cannot find people, like they cannot hire developers, whatever, and so on and so
Yeah.
on. Complexity, once again, yeah, like. Nowadays, when you look at the job offers, you read them. Like 6 or 7 years ago, for the sake of example, you could split this offer into two or three separate roles.
Right.
It's also because developers became very, very expensive. So it's like, I don't know, we pay you 24,000, let's say, pounds per month, so we expect you to work 24 hours per day. Unfortunately, we cannot pay you 50,000 pounds per month because you will not work 50 hours per day. So that's the thing. I think that one of the changes which will be popping up, it will be people sort of backing out of tech. I think right now the pendulum is starting to swing back. Obviously, when you are like into tech, like you are a developer or tech junkie, you don't do this. Other people start to realize that Okay, it's more or less still the same dog, but looking a bit differently.
Right, that's an interesting point you've risen, because technology, IT, and technology in general became quite popular, among people that are gaining those skills. So what you're saying is we might actually see a decrease in people joining technology. That's a very interesting point.
Because they already got the tools, they can do this or that job. And then another thing, totally not related to technology, aging society. Like in the US nowadays, 10,000 people retire every day. It's like every
Right.
single day. So you can figure out like how many days it will take to replace the entire state of New York with these people. Like New York, it's like, let's say, I don't know, 5 million people or something like this. Like just do the math. It's a bit of an exercise, yeah,
Yeah.
after the podcast. These people will change their habits. Like they will definitely use some consumer apps, casually. It's also, people who have this, institutional, situational, like good memory, good ex like experience and memory of, working, here and there, seeing it all. It's like you can imagine what it's more or less like when someone is 20 or 30, when you are 50 or 60.
Yeah.
Like, working with these people, you can somehow spot what they struggle with because they maybe like this or that experience, or this or that fire never came across them to learn how to deal with this. But all these young people cannot imagine forward. Yeah. And it, you know, this this will be a very big thing. Not everybody will want to keep on working, even like a, take a side job after they retire.
Yeah, I get it. Thank you, Pavel. And maybe final question. Can you share a particularly memorable experience or a project that you worked on from your career as a technology leader that had a significant impact on your personal and professionally as well?
Okay, I think it's like with love, like first love and then you sort of wait hopefully for the last one, yeah.
Yeah.
That first project when I was a, I was a total newbie. I actually like had this wishy-washy imaginary idea of how it is to code. I got an internship 2005 or something like this, and I coded a plugin for Microsoft Project. It
Right.
basically converted the project definition into a format used XML format used by workflow engines, like these engines which sort of move documents for approvals around and so on and so on. So that was this project, which was simply, pretty steep, and I was going there during the day, coming back and looking up, things on the web, to figure out basically what to do the next day. Then I think, I somehow shifted to being like a bit m more, a technology user, as I said, with some skills. So like what I try to do now is like how to use this tech to, yeah, have less meetings, like what I said, or how can we reorganize some things to maybe, go home earlier. This is something what I pay more attention nowadays. And then it's good to have this project on your plate, which has no rush or hurry factor, like something like whether I work on this or not, like nothing happens. Like something you can think about for a month, then tweak something over the weekend, leave it, like something with completely like no pressure. Pick something like this. Maybe join some open source project or something like this. This is something fantastic because you will have all the work to do at your regular job and all the stress it usually brings in a package.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Pavel.
Yeah, sure.
Must say I feel super privileged of having you here on the
Well,
podcast. So thank you
thanks for
very much.
inviting.
It's been a really inspiring talk, and I think we bring some value to our audience thanks to that. Pavel, it was great to have you again. Thank you so much for your time today, and wish you the good rest of the day and the week.
Yeah, sure. That's the same.